When we approach the unconscious, it's like that, going we know not where, and we surely don't know what we're going to bring back. But it's a task many of us need to do, or we lose our heads. We really do. This is part of what we call the individuation process. And we use myths and fairy tales and all of these as part of our process of stimulating the imagination, of helping us have a context out of which we can operate, and of understanding our place. Okay? So, now let's kind of differentiate between some of the things that we're going to be talking about, and then we'll get into the fairy tales more specifically. Okay? First of all, anybody have any questions? Yeah?
I got lost at one point in the fairy tale, and that was...
That's all right. Fido did too.
After he met the merchants, and the deal was, how did they give him these three things? I mean...
He gave up his servant, and he said that, if you take my servant, then I want these three things. Each one of you has to give me one of these things.
And that was the garden.
The box. It wasn't Pandora's box, but it was the Garden of Eden box. Okay, and then which is incidentally, from a psychological point of view, a very significant image, because Psyche will very often, especially as one begins the individuation process, you'll have what I call a Garden of Eden dream. It's a paradise dream of some sort. Because if you're going into that rough journey, you have to have something to hold on to say, oh, that's going to be the goal, or that's the place one day I can rest. So very often, initially, when you go into analysis, agitated, distressed, upset, whatever, you will find that there's a certain kind of relief of the initial pressure. And then you'll have a beautiful dream. And that's your dream that you can retreat to when things get really rough, when you're dealing with your shadow, your negative shadow. And then, and so it's that dream or that image that's very important to be able to have. You need to have some place in the psyche or some place in the soul. Eventually you find it becomes the sacred space within. Eventually, that's your sacred space. But that's the image then of the garden. And then the second is the hammer and the third is the horn. Okay. Anybody else have any questions? Yeah? Go, I know not whither, and bring back, I know not what. It's in the Russian fairy tales. Neat one, huh? Okay. Now, let's just do some differentiating here. Now that I'm going to kind of shift you out of your right brain into your left brain. And then we can all prove we're brainy, huh? Okay, myth. A myth is a traditional story. And if you want any of these definitions, just go to the dictionary. Okay, so just listen. It's a traditional story, ostensibly with historical basis. It serves to explain some phenomenon in nature or the origin of man, customs, institutions, religious rites of a people. So that, in other words, the myth is really a very powerful story of the psyche and of the soul. A legend is, usually a story of a saint, or the story of some kind of wondrous event that occurred somewhere, and it's one that gets handed down generation after generation, and it may belong to a group of people. So the Irish have their leprechauns, or you have the Celtic stories and so forth. And these are the stories that people tell. You have the stories in Ireland, for instance, of St. Patrick and the snakes and so on. Then we have folk tales. And these are stories with legendary or mythical elements. And they're handed down usually among the common folk. It's not the kinds of stories that usually gets told in the king's castle, but among the common folk. And our folklore, of course, we can scientifically study to give us a sense of people's customs and traditions and beliefs and so on. So these are the part of the oral tradition that recorded people's history, a people's history. A fable, you know, your Aesop's and so on. Now these are fictitious narratives that are intended to give a moral truth or a moral precept. the way we teach children the do's and the don'ts and the shoulds and the should nots, and eventually the good old superego takes over. But to try to teach children initially, you have to make it in fun game. And it's only later that we can really hammer down. And a saga. Now, sagas are very special because this comes out of the medieval Scandinavian literature. And you will discover that, for instance, in Iceland, they have a very special sagas. And there are the stories of battles and customs and legends and so forth that are given in narrative prose. And again, it is a traditional history of a family or a village, a group of people. It's the oral tradition. So that kind of gives you a background of a lot of the images that we have that carry the story of human beings. And the one that we focus on, and of course the intent, is on fairy tales. The Bible, I guess, if you will, in Jungian circles for fairy tale interpretation is Marie-Louise von Franz. She's quite a storyteller, actually. She loves telling stories. I do, too. And fairy tales, she says, are pure and simple expressions of the collective unconscious. And fairy tales are psychic process. All of this you can read just in the very first few pages that Marie-Louise von Franz has. The significant thing about fairy tales is that we have archetypal images. And they seem to be pretty clearly articulated in fairy tales. We could take just a few of the figures in our Go I Know Not Whither. The frog, a very powerful image. Incidentally, just as I was driving in, there was a song, he's a wonderful singer, quite a balladeer. And he was talking about being a New Yorker. He lives out in the West Coast. And he's singing his song and so forth, and he's saying, who am I, who am I, and I am who I am, and trying to make some kind of declaration in spite of the fact that he's all confused in terms of where his territory is. But the wonderful thing, one little line in there I chuckled at as I was driving into the parking lot, was that he was singing, did you ever hear of a frog who wanted to be a king and became one? So that, you know, the fairy tales become, or these kinds of symbols, become quite, I mean, it's a shared experience. I mean, you all know about kissing the frog and it becoming it's a bewitched prince. I mean, so that doesn't even have to be explained. It's something that people share. Anyway. Neil Diamond, yeah, that's it, thanks. Eventually, it would have come, thanks, yeah. All right. The thing about the fairy tales that von Franz says is that there are that the material in the fairy tale is specific. It's less specific, and it's very unconscious material. Over against, for instance, myths, which are really far more indicative of the collective. Essentially, it's unconscious consciousness. It truly has much more of a significance, or it's closer to the conscious realities or the conscious attitudes of people. Also in myths, you know, you have the stories of the hero, or the gods. Myths are very often involved with the stories of the gods or the godlike people, whereas in fairy tales, they're just dumblings, or, you know, sometimes they're even nerds, and sometimes they're very interesting, and you know, then you get the hero that he kills 7 flies and he's a big hero. I mean, you know, I was just reading in Time magazine today that came yesterday. There is a folk hero, some killer, that because he eluded the sheriff and so forth, he's become a folk hero. See? Well, that's like killing 7 flies and thinking that you're a big shot. Anyway, the significance about the fairy tales is that like dreams, they have their own explanation. And if you follow, there are very meaningful threads. And if you follow even further, you will find that the motifs will complete a particular story. or particular bit of information in terms of your own psychic process. Now, von Fraun says that fairy tales, regardless of where they come from, anywhere in the world, no matter how many themes you have, how many stories you have, the bottom line is they are talking about the self.